Estimates of the number of patients Arago was treating each day ranged from the wildly exaggerated to the timidly cautious. Television news programs, which frequently interrupted regular programs with special news bulletins on Arago, insisted that the crowds were as high as 1,000 each day. Whatever the exact number was, the crowds were impressive. The most conservative estimate was 300 a day, excluding the families and friends who accompanied the patients on the trip. Some tourists, arriving to see the Aliagedino statuary, were completely caught by surprise on learning about Arago. Armin Bauer, from Germany, was so taken aback on encountering this utterly incredible phenomenon that he wrote up his experience for Die Zeit when he returned home. He was a well-traveled man, his journeys having taken him on several safaris in Africa and all through Asia and around the world. Not knowing Portuguese, he had some trouble making himself as informed as he wanted to be about Brazil, a country which he and other tourists found easy to fall in love with. He had arrived to visit a friend, an executive with the Volkswagen company, Ines Atilda Pando Paulo. Learning about the staggering elegance and artistry of the Aliagedino sculptures, he set off for Minas Gerais to see them, and the countryside as well. In the streets of Congonhas do Campo, he was delighted to find another German, accompanied by his adult daughter. They were the only ones he had encountered on his trip who spoke his language, always a welcome event when one is traveling alone. He was startled when they told him that the reason they had come to Congonhas was to seek a cure for the daughter, who was suffering from leukemia. Her illness had been diagnosed by doctors in 88, Germany as terminal, and they had come here as a last resort. Why on earth, Bauer asked, would they come to this little mountain town? They told him about Arago and asked him if he had liked to come with them. Bauer felt embarrassed and uncomfortable, but accepted their invitation. He also felt it was tragic that these fellow Germans were putting their trust in a village faith healer of dubious qualifications at best. Although he felt a little foolish, he went with them to the Centro Espírito de Bom Jesus de Nazarene, the new location, named by the Spiritists, where Arago was now practicing. Bauer was impressed by the cathedral silence of the large room and the wide spectrum of social classes waiting to see Arago. He managed to look over Altimiro Atm's shoulder as he typed up one of the prescriptions, expecting to find it nothing more than a list of black magic potions and herbs. Instead, he saw pharmaceuticals listed from Skirring, Bayer, Squibb, Upjohn, and other famous houses. He was also surprised to notice the number of people who waited for hours in line simply to tell Arago they had come back to Congonhas to give him their devout thanks for curing them in the past. And as Arago took a pair of nail scissors and hacked at a trigema wing-like growth that fixes itself immovably across the eye from the conjunctiva to the cornea, he noticed several people in line fainting or collapsing, including a foreign journalist. But the patient stood calmly, unperturbed, and fully conscious. On his return to Germany, Bauer wrote for Die Zeit, "I really don't yet think this can be explained by spiritism, as some of the Brazilians say. Arago has none of the atmosphere of mysticism surrounding him. This should be urgently looked into and needs special study. Scientists are going to have their doubts, say nothing like this has happened before. It has to be seen to be experienced." Tm. Arago was swamped by requests for appointments from prominent people, Brazilian and otherwise. The Peruvian consul in Rio telegraphed for an appointment, but like the others, he had to come on a first-come, first-served basis. Of the constant stream of journalists that came into Congonhas do Campo, several were inspired to write 89 books about him. Among them were Reinaldo Cumanal, who flatly called Arago the eighth wonder of the world. Geraldo Cyrano wrote that Arago was far from a saint, but that scientists would be afraid of the challenge presented by Arago, since they would be quickly convinced they would lose the battle with rationality. Jorge Rini eventually published a book about Arago, recounting his own direct experiences with him, and backed up by his documentary film footage. A highly regarded professor of philosophy named J. Herculano Pires produced a carefully documented book, perhaps the most profound one written about the phenomenon. The problem that all the authors faced was one of restraint. After observing Arago over weeks or months or years, they simply could not refrain from going overboard in adulation and wonderment. Under the circumstances, this was understandable. As Arago at EMS fame grew, a large segment of the medical profession began to get interested, both favorable and unfavorable in attitude. They would soon be facing the same problem, maintaining objectivity in the face of utterly incredible empirical facts. The problem would be in separating the subjective from the objective. Obviously, the most important phase for study would be the objective evidence, because it could be measured and grasped. As the public clamor and confusion grew throughout Brazil, Arago continued to grapple with his down-to-earth problems as well as those of his healing powers. He was still determined to run for office in Congonhas do Campo as the only means of trying to correct injustices he had found as a miner and as a friend of the underprivileged. In some quarters, his political hopes were considered as censurable as his healing work. Arago found himself running against his own uncle, Lamartine de Freitas, for mayor. Lamartine de Freitas was establishment to the core. He was a staunch Catholic, unadulterated by the alleged heresies Arago was committing daily. He was also a landholder of considerable stature, and a heavy favorite of the conservative voters in town. Arago was, of course, just the opposite. Under normal conditions, this would have made him the favorite, and carried the tide as far as mass votes were 90 concerned. However, the official church had it noised about the town that Arago was a man who wasn't EMT going along with the mandates of the church. Further, Arago at EMS political enemies spread the word that the only reason Arago was conducting his bizarre clinic for the poor and sick was to gather votes for his political career. Many other stories were circulated about him. Arago was a brawler, he had had a fight with an unruly patron of his bar, and had thrown him out. Arago collected money from his patients surreptitiously. Arago arranged for kickbacks from the druggists and pharmaceutical companies. Arago had a mistress and an illegitimate daughter in Belo Horizonte Oreo. There was no evidence for any of these charges, but the opposition made sure the stories were spread. Arago lost the election by some 200 votes. But his supporters charged that the ballots had been tampered with when they were held for the night at the local post office instead of being forwarded to the town of Lafayette, where they were legally required to be sent for a non-partisan count. By the time his uncle assumed the office of mayor, the cards were down. Lamartine de Freitas called Arago to his office and summarily demanded that he either give up his clinic or leave town. Arago bluntly refused. The two forces of the establishment and the maverick now moved into more clearly defined battle positions. The attempt was obviously to make Arago an outcast, but the tides of people that swept into Congonhas to see him increased. Eventually, his uncle backed down, and Arago went on with his healing work with greater vitality than ever. This function seemed to be an entirely separate compartment of his life. Some speculated that the reason for his being able to suspend his mundane functions when treating the sick was that he literally was not conscious of what he was doing when he performed surgical operations or wrote prescriptions. For the confirmed spiritist, the answer was easy: he wasn't EMT Arago when he worked at his clinic. He was Dr. Adolfo Fritz, and Arago at EMS body was only a shell, a functionary that carried out the beneficent urges of the deceased German 91, doctor, who took on far greater skills in his afterlife than he had possessed on Earth. This was such a far-fetched concept that few others could grasp it. All that was really obvious was that Arago was clearly suspending the laws of physics, and even the most caustic skeptic had to admit this, if he took the time to observe the man in action. Most critics did not bother to investigate. However, they dismissed the stories they heard about Arago as impossibilities, an attitude hardly to be faulted in the face of such incredible events. Interesting evidence on Arago at EMS lack of awareness of his own work showed up when Jorge Rini asked Arago to look at some of the color motion picture films he had taken of Arago performing an operation. Rini set up his projector in the clinic after the last patient had left, The film began rolling, and the first scene depicted Arrigo stabbing a penknife into a patient at EMSI. Arrigo, no longer in the trance state that seemed to characterize his working hours in the clinic, watched the scene with growing horror. Within moments, his head dropped down on his chest, and he fainted. When he came to, he rushed from the room yelling in a loud voice that this was too terrible to look at. But it was apparent that Arrigo could not stop the work in the clinic even if he wanted to. It was a compulsion of overwhelming magnitude. He was able at times to get away from it, and stoutly refused to treat anyone on Saturdays and Sundays, when he would retreat with his family to a house on his wealthy aunt at TMS farm. She was the only member of the family who was a spiritist, and she encouraged him to keep on. Here Arrigo enjoyed his only hobby, the growing of roses. Like everything else he attacked in life, he was obsessive about the literally thousands of rose bushes he nourished and grew. With the financial help of his aunt, he sent them out by the carton to hospitals all over the state of Minas Gerais and elsewhere. They came to be a trademark of his. When he was entreated by a patient on a weekend, he would become surly and tough, and say, "Hey, do you think he ATM made of steel? Don't you TMT you know I have a family?" ATM. As the praises for Arrigo grew across the country in both 92, the press and television, his detractors gathered their forces. The Catholic clergy was of course the spearhead, along with the bulk of the members of the Medical Association of the State of Minas Gerais. But individuals too bore resentment against Arrigo, among them his political enemies. Antonio Maia Zebra, a resident of Congonhas, was one of these. He accused Arrigo of being a rank opportunist who was looking after his own interests. He spread stories that Arrigo ATMS operations were all tricks. He also passed rumors along that Altimiro, in handing out the cards that designated the position of the people in line, charged 15 cruzeiros for each card, which he split with Arrigo. He also saw to it that stories circulated to the effect that any patient Arrigo treated would have to sign a card indicating he would vote for Arrigo in any forthcoming election. He insisted that Arrigo swilled one or two bottles of wine with each meal. Zebra was joined in his attack by two doctors in town, each of whom quite understandably resented the intrusion into their bailiwick. Dr. Coimbra, Arrigo ATMS family doctor for years, could no longer tolerate the fact that Arrigo was blatantly practicing illegal medicine, and made his feelings widely known on the subject. He went beyond this legitimate criticism to ascribe motives that Arrigo ATMS friends staunchly claimed were untrue. Dr. Coimbra accused Arrigo of practicing black magic, and said that the sole reason Arrigo continued his illegal practice was simply to become famous so he could gain political power. But most of Arrigo ATMS detractors admitted that Arrigo was a hard worker, a good father, and a good family man, nay, in spite of rumors of occasional extramarital excursions. Altimiro, who was now facing the same censorship from the church as Arrigo, was also highly thought of in the community. Obviously, any defense against the practice of illegal medicine was impossible, even by the most passionate advocate of Arrigo. The sinister part was the attempt of many, principally for political reasons, to look for devious motives that did not exist in the man. Resentment also followed in the wake of the number of distinguished visitors who made the long trip to Congonhas 93, for the sole purpose of seeing Arrigo and, in the process, ignored the local politicians. Rumors stirred that Juscelino Kubitschek, freshly elected president of the country, had arranged for his daughter to see Arrigo to be cured of massive inoperable kidney stones that had resisted several specialists at EM care in Europe and North America. Later, this was to be confirmed. But even the rumor of it at this time intensified the resentment of Arrigo ATMS enemies. Kubitschek was overwhelmingly popular throughout the country, and was already embarking on the construction of Brasilia, the fantastic new capital that was to rise out of the wilderness in the geographic center of the country. Other patients at the time included President Kubitschek, a TMS personal pilot, the head of the President at TMS Security Police, a prominent judge, the captain of the Minas Gerais State Police, and several generals of the Brazilian Army. These and others amounted to a formidable array facing down Arrigo's TMS critics, and undoubtedly slowed the impetus of the court proceedings that had not yet struck. Further, a group of doctors in the neighboring town of Lafayette, aroused by the flood of rumors that was swamping the entire country, began an informal investigation of Arrigo. They included Dr. Jose Tilda Copyright Demasio, Dr. Antonio Castanera, and a Dr. Vitorino. They were joined by Dr. João Ranulf de Mello, of Congonhas. Together, they observed two cataract operations and two ovarian cyst operations, one by way of the abdomen, the other through the vagina. On careful examination before and after the surgery, they agreed that the operations were completely valid, that the tissues involved were skillfully removed, and that practically no scar was left. As usual, there were no anesthesia, no antisepsis, practically no bleeding, no pain, and no stitching. As for the crucifix that Arrigo later placed over the surgical areas, the doctors had no comment. They agreed, however, that there was no natural explanation for what they had observed, that no ordinary doctor could possibly do this, and that an intensive scientific study on Arrigo should immediately be set up, if they could gather the necessary funds. The initial ignition for all these staggering phenomena 94, had of course been Senator Lucio Bittencourt, and his continuous praise carried the momentum along. His health was excellent, and he was a prominent living testimonial to Arrigo's TMS inexplicable powers. One day after a particularly long line of patients, Arrigo was joined by his friend Gabriel Cater, a newspaperman who served in Minas Gerais as a stringer for several Brazilian journals. Arrigo was disturbed and uneasy. Cater probed him about this, and Arrigo finally told him that he had seen in his mind a TMS eye that day, a black crucifix that disturbed him greatly. Pressed for the reason, Arrigo said that each time this had happened, someone close to him had died. Cater tried to cheer him up, to get his mind off the somber symbol. But it was little use. Arrigo went home as distressed as he was before. The next morning, Cater was about to go through his usual routine of scanning several newspapers of the day when he was stopped short by the first paper he picked up. The lead headline read, "Senator Lucio Bittencourt killed in auto crash." Arrigo was crushed by the loss of his friend, but he was further upset by the ominous proclivity he had of seeing ahead when a tragedy was about to happen. It left him depressed and worried, but he went on with his overwhelming routine in spite of it. It was only a few days before he received another jolt. He was going about the usual treatment of his patients when a sudden sharp reaction went through him. He stopped his pen in midair and put it down. Sitting by his typewriter, Altamiro noticed the unusual action. He watched Arrigo leave his table, cross into the big room, and confront a man in the line. "Are you a policeman?" ATM Arrigo asked. The man said that he was. "Hey, come with me, ATM," Arrigo said. He marched the man into his small office and abruptly sent the waiting patients there out into the big room. He told Altamiro to stay with him, then closed the door. Arrigo's TMS eyes were blazing. Altamiro had never seen them that way before. "You came down here, TM," Arrigo said to the policeman. "8 and 95, ask me for a prescription because you want to take that prescription to the judge, is that correct?" "ATM," the policeman nodded. "In this way you will get evidence to bring a court proceeding against me, is that not right?" "ATM." The policeman looked frightened, but he nodded again. "First to TM," said Arrigo, "you have to take care of your family. You have not seen them for a long time. You have neglected them. Is that not true?" "ATM." The policeman muttered something, but eventually said yes. "It is your duty to take care of them first, TM," Arrigo said. "And then you can take care of your judge and your courts. So I will write you a prescription. Do you agree to follow it?" "ATM," the policeman said that he would. Arrigo took a sheet of paper, and wrote on it swiftly, "Read the Bible. Early in the morning. In the afternoon. At night time. 3 times a day without fail." He handed it to the man, whose face was flushed. The policeman studied the sheet of paper, nodded, and left the room. Arago went on with his work. 96. 5. In these days of the early and mid-50s, there were many preoccupations throughout the world, not the least of which was the Korean War, as far as the United States was concerned, and the development of the hydrogen bomb, as far as the world was concerned. While the latter was the major fruit of mid-century physics, the biological explosion was just shaping up, to result in reaching the threshold of living matter with James Watson at TMS and Francis Crick at TMS discovery of the critical function of RNA and DNA. Medicine was continuing to make giant strides with the development of cortisone, of Maxilla a TMS vaccine to combat yellow fever, of streptomycin, of Jonas Salk a TMS polio vaccine, of other new broad-spectrum miracle drugs. Advances in physics were coming so fast that it looked as if the study of elementary particles might reach a dead end, a point where science began to blend with metaphysics. Not the least interesting was the discovery of the antiproton at the University of California, suggesting the almost absurd concept of antimatter. This concept clearly brought the pragmatic physicist to the threshold of the paranormal. It even suggested the possibility that there were stars or whole galaxies in the universe made of antimatter. No science fiction writer could invent a more far-out idea, yet the discovery of antimatter, identical to normal matter except that its protons and electrons are charged in opposite directions, was being routinely verified from MIT to Caltech. On colliding with normal protons and electrons, antimatter causes the total destruction of both. Explaining the new phenomenon, physicist Leon Lederman of the Brookhaven National Laboratory said bluntly, "A new and deeper world and anti-world symmetry is now believed to hold, in which the anti-world does not only have anti-particles replace particles, but also is a mirror image of our world at EM." He went on to add, "It is not possible now to disprove the grand speculation that these anti-worlds could 97. be populated by thinking creatures at EM." Such revolutionary concepts were shaking the conventional views of science, and this inspired some scientists to set up, in the early 50s, organized studies in fields that science had neglected or overlooked. The scientists involved knew nothing of what was going on with Arago in the town of Congonhas at the time. They did, as a group, feel that research on paranormal events and energy transfer phenomena was being grossly neglected in the light of the major advances in physics and medical science. One of the groups consisted of a generous handful of physicians, engineers, surgeons, neurologists, executives, and professors. They were working in varied fields, including universities, hospitals, government, and industry, in addition to those in private practice. There was a senior research scientist in surgery, a manager of an astroelectronics division of a large corporation, a chief research psychiatrist, a professor of surgery, a professor of philosophy, a neurologist, and others. They worked in a variety of highly respected institutions, among them Stanford University, New York University, Massachusetts General Hospital, the University of Pittsburgh, and Radio Corporation of America. Eventually they formed themselves into a loose organization known as Accenture Research Associates, based in New York. At about the same time that Arago was burgeoning with his healing work in Brazil, some of this group began a tentative exploration of telepathy for divisions of the United States government, including NASA and the U.S. Air Force. But for the most part, progress was fitful and public funds were hard to come by. The Accenture Research Group could make only tentative probes into the paranormal, including non-sensory transfer of information. Dr. Henry Puharich, who later was to join Henry Belk in the encounter with Arago in Brazil, was one of the Accenture Research Group. He joined forces with John Lawrence, who belonged to a similar group called Life Energies Research. This organization was centering its interest on the use of complex electronic sensors to locate and identify energy systems surrounding the human body. These ill-defined 98 energies had been crudely studied in the past, but advanced study would have to wait on the development of sensitive instrumentation. there was definite interest in many quarters, from the Pentagon to NASA to the Atomic Energy Commission, and Puharich and others were invited to fill many speaking engagements. But interest was still too sluggish to generate the large amount of funds necessary to reach any comprehensive conclusions. If, in the mid-50s, the work that Arago was doing had come to serious attention in the United States, greater strides in enlightenment might have been made. As it was, any scientific study would have to outrace the pressures being brought to bear by those who wanted the courts to clamp down on his practices forever. Fortunately, there was a growing number of highly qualified physicians and surgeons in Brazil who were beginning to take Arago seriously enough to examine the facts. Some of this interest was reflected in peculiar ways. One surgeon tried to use hypnosis to duplicate Arago Atms' bold use of a knife in a patient at TMSI. The surgeon used a small, dull, spatula-type instrument to minimize any damage, but even though he put the patient under deep hypnosis, the results were disastrous. He had barely touched the instrument to the eye when the patient backed off in terror. Whatever Arago was doing, it apparently was not within the grasp of the ordinary surgeon. The resentment of doctors against Arago was certainly understandable, not only from the point of view of competition, but also of pride. The educational requirements for doctors in Brazil are as strenuous as they are in the United States, with pre-med, medical school, internship, and residency all requiring a beefy investment of time and money. For a country bumpkin who never went beyond third grade to command such attention throughout the entire country and attract internationally prominent citizens naturally stung their professional pride. On the other hand, those doctors whose curiosity was greater than their resentment found themselves in considerable awe at what went on before their eyes. One of these doctors was Dr. Leandro Margues, of Rio de Janeiro, who was growing tired of hearing and reading about Arago, and determined to go up to the provincial reaches of Minas Gerais to find out more about this legend. He took with him another doctor from Rio who preferred to remain anonymous, and they prepared themselves for the worst. Several months before the two doctors had gathered their courage against what they were sure would be the scathing criticism of their colleagues, a woman by the name of Maria Silveiro went to her own doctor in the city of Vitória Coimbra, the capital of Espírito Santo state. She had been suffering constant pain in her lower midsection, and her concern was growing. Her fears were shared by her doctor, who immediately called in a specialist. It was an TMT long before the diagnosis was definitely confirmed as ovarian cancer, and it was recommended that an operation be carried out immediately. With her husband, Ismanio Silveiro, a prominent local official in Vitória, they made arrangements for the operation to be done in the best hospital in the city. The surgery was performed, but it was completely unsuccessful. The prognosis was shattering, she had only a few months to live. All the doctors concerned with the case had given her up. Ismanio Silveiro confided in a friend of his, Virgilio Mendes Ferres, about his wife's TMS illness. Ferres was one of the wealthiest men in the area, a prosperous landowner who was known throughout the state. On hearing Silveiro's TMS plight, he told him about his own wife's TMS similar experience. She had been pronounced a hopeless case of cancer by every specialist she had visited, and there were many. He had been told about Arago, and as a last resort, he took his wife to Congonhas do Campo, with little hope or expectation. Arago performed a startling operation on his fully conscious wife, and within weeks she was restored to full health. Ferres had been so overcome by the miraculous cure that he sent Arago a check for $50,000. He had been surprised when Arago promptly returned the check to him, stating that he could not accept money or gifts of any kind. Ferres urged Silveiro to take his wife to Arago, stating 100, that anything was worth the risk in the face of the prognosis the doctors had determined. The Silveiros arrived in Congonhas do Campo at precisely the same time that Dr. Leandro Margues and his anonymous colleague arrived from Rio. Feeling somewhat uncomfortable, the two doctors from Rio were ushered into the small back room of Arago TMS clinic, beyond his own usual working area. This was the place reserved for the more serious operations. The room was sparsely furnished. An old door, stretched between two sawhorses, was used as an operating table.